Welcome to episode 28 of Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit.
Yay!
We have our beautiful sister, Melissa. I was looking through our recipes. At this point, we have quite a few recipes. Go back and take a look, and you will see that we are lacking in vegetable recipes. We had Nana's ratatouille and a couple of salads. Bossy remembered that Melissa makes this wonderful tomato concoction,
Composition.
a composition. Yes. If you'll remember that in our Valentine's episode back in February, we interviewed Melissa for her book. So, yeah, we're having her back to talk about her tomato recipe. You want to tell us about it?
First off, thanks so much for having me back. You guys are celebrities for me. I was just like, oh, they want me back. And I haven't even had to curry favor, although I have been trying not to be mean to you. So that was very hard. I discovered this recipe actually very randomly. I was driving back and forth. I was commuting, working full time as a teacher, 60 plus hours as a special ed and as an art teacher and kind of thing, as well as trying to launch my art career on the side. And I had two horses and I was married and very much overwhelmed with the property that we had. I heard this recipe on NPR. I wish I could track this cookbook down. And if any of our listeners want to help me out with that. And I heard it maybe 15 years ago. This guy had come up with this cookbook saying, like, look, I get it. People are on the run, they're busy, but that doesn't mean that you have to eat potato chips all the time. And I'm like, how did he know?
He had been watching you,
Yeah,
Melissa.
driving, exactly. I sort of drove past Junk Food Alley to and from work. He said the big game changers is if you have fresh herbs, invest in fresh herbs. And it's only a couple bucks and you'll use them. And his recipe was basically depending on the size of the cans of tomatoes, but two big cans of tomatoes or four small cans of tomatoes that are diced, or you can kind of chop them up in there, spread them out in a sheet pan casserole. I'm not sure exactly what to call that. You guys are good on that.
I think you cooked it in like a 9 by 13 Pyrex pan, didn't you?
Yes. And sometimes too, I've also cooked it in pie pans, shallow pie pans. So you dump the cans in there, spread them out, and then you coarse chop a big bunch of cilantro, use the whole bunch. The cilantro is not just like a little seasoning, it's almost like a vegetable within it. You can also use parsley. Coarse chop two or three cloves of garlic if you like garlic, as do all good people. Eric does like garlic, which I'm like,
I
Steve. And here's a little quick tip about garlic. If you let it sit for at least 5 minutes, 10 minutes, it will increase in potency. So both in flavor and in terms of the stuff that it's supposed to be good for you. Sprinkle some salt, pepper, drizzle olive oil, stick it in the oven. He says 325, 350, somewhere in there. And you let it bake for about 45 minutes, an hour. You want it to reduce. And it's amazing and it impresses guests, even though you did almost nothing except for open a few cans and chop up some stuff. The other thing is, I like to make it with polenta, but I was noticing that the stovetop polenta recipe was kind of mushy, and then you had the mushy tomatoes, and I wanted to have sort of a little bit more contrast and texture. And so I'm sure I'm not the only one to come up with this, but I decided to try baking the polenta afterwards. So you make it on the stove and then put it into a greased cast iron frying pan, and then you bake it with the tomatoes, and then you run around trying to get ready for your guests and sweep the dog hair under the couch, not even get it up. The other thing it goes really well with is sausages. I like to get Idale's sausages from Costco, and you can make those on the stovetop, or you could also bake those. Guests are impressed. The dog hair is underneath the sofa where it belongs. And I felt very flattered that you guys asked me to come on to the show because you guys, I think of as really great cooks who are really entertaining with that. And the hostess with the mostest. And I'm more of the run around. And as long as you have good food and drinks, the guests will forgive you for all the dog hair. So that's my style of
Well, Liz, I
entertaining.
have to tell you, I
Oh,
have very
so.
fond memories of you making this for me. I remember, I think it was when my son was around six or so, and we came out. It's a big trip across the country. And then when you get to Seattle, then you get in a car and then you drive to swim. And we were visiting you and staying. And I remember you made this dish. And at the time, I didn't really cook a lot with cilantro. I was one of those people who I think initially didn't like it very much, although I've grown to love it. And I just remember it was like a revelation. There's something about the slow cooking of the tomatoes. And I loved what you said about the cilantro is almost like another vegetable in there. And I think it's the two that really makes it. I don't know how it would be with parsley. I feel like that wouldn't have quite the punch of that.
It's good with parsley. It's a different flavor. I mean, but it's still good.
And you're not talking about the curly parsley. You're talking about flat leaf parsley.
I've used both, but I prefer the flat leaf. Sometimes I notice the flat leaf parsley doesn't look so good in the store, but the curly leaf looks better. So it depends on what looks better or fresher in terms of that. But I prefer it with the cilantro.
And do you drain the tomatoes before you?
No, just right in there. If for some reason you don't have diced tomatoes, you can just dump them into the Pyrex, and then I would use like either a knife or board scraper to just chop them up within there. And I often will use a board scraper to push the cilantro or the parsley or whatever it is into the tomatoes, mix it up there. I mean, I don't really try to mix it too much. And when it comes out, often the cilantro looks a little bit like it's been through a lot between the tomatoes and the heat of the oven. So you just stir it up and it looks good.
You can always save a little bit of the fresh stuff, just sprinkle on top.
Yeah, if you have time from not getting the dog hair under your couch.
It is really delicious. I put it in a frying pan, the tomato sauce, and then I poached some eggs in there. And that was really, really good. So all you do is you put your tomato sauce in the frying pan, however much you might not need the whole thing, maybe half. And then I was poaching six eggs, so I did a fairly large frying pan. And then I made sort of a divot in the tomato sauce for the egg, put the egg in, and then cover the pan and poach it for maybe five.
Sounds so good. Like, I want that now.
Some of us like the more runny than others, so it's always, and it depends on the size of the egg and all of that. So it can be a little tricky, but that came out really well. And the polenta was so good. I did add a little cheese at the end.
Cheese is good.
Well,
cheese is awesome.
I have to tell you both that when I told Mom,
Hi, Mom.
That we were featuring these recipes. Do you know what she said? And this is a direct quote. Well, I don't like either of those things. I don't like stewed tomatoes, and I have never understood why everyone thinks polenta is so great.
I know. Yes, she said that to me too.
The woman is supposed to be the champion behind all of our endeavors. Yes.
I don't like it.
I don't think she's ever had this. I said to her, it's really not stewed tomatoes. It's like roasted and baked. Because I do agree that the word stewed conjures up images of stewing in your own juices. And the polenta, I do get what she says about the polenta. It can be kind of like cream of wheat. It's so good to eat.
But that's why you bake it, so that it has, it's sort of like kind of in between cornbread and banana bread. It's got kind of a creamy center with a little crunch on it.
Yeah. And I mean, the fact that you can put it in the oven while the tomatoes are cooking, you can put your polenta in as well. A total game changer doing the polenta that way. Really, really good.
The other thing I like about this is the sequencing. Well, giving you an hour to panic clean and is excellent. And don't think that I don't panic clean. My husband and I are the maps of panic clean.
I can tell you one time I was at Bossy. So this was about an hour before the guests were due to arrive. And Bossy says, there's this large pile of wood that I would like to move
It needed to be stacked.
Clearly, because the guests.
Yeah.
I mean, well, the.
Yeah. And so she roped my kids and her son reluctantly
into if you want to me. Eat, you will and... move. Yeah. I never thought about doing that to my. No, I've had my guests pitch in. I mean, my rule of thumb is have the drinks ready so you get them drunk and they don't notice. Yes. How dirty the place is. And then one of my rules yeah. is guests will forgive you almost anything as long as you feed them and wine and dine them well. As long as you give them good drinks and good food, they really don't care. Make sure the bathroom is clean. But
yeah, I think that's true. Yes. And we did get it done. We actually moved the large, what do you call a big pile of wood? A cord. It was like five cords of wood.
It was not five cords.
This is like a new thing. Like, make your guests work for their food. If you want to eat, you got to do some heavy labor for us.
It's kind of like when you go on a trip and suddenly these things that you haven't done yeah. for years, you've got to suddenly do before you leave. And I remember somebody, I think it was you, Liz, gave me this little post-it that said had this woman's lounging on this thing. And it said, thank God for the last minute. If it weren't for the last minute, I'd get nothing done. And that has been my motto. Yeah. Cram it into the last yeah. minute. And I don't know why we can't clean our house for the people who actually live there. We always only clean it for when people are visiting.
Because we can read and we can knit and do things that we like to do.
Yeah.
Well, Liz, what before you go, what are you painting and working on these days?
I have to pinch myself. I feel so very, very lucky. I'm working on a major mural for the American Legion right now, and it has a lot of meaning for me because I had gotten involved with some advocacy around the Afghan situation a few years ago, and as a result had made friends with quite a few veterans. And then sort of unbeknownst to the local SWIM American Legion, they were like, we need a muralist for the building. Your name came up. And I was like, oh my God, I have so much to say about this because I unexpectedly made all these friends this way. And I wanted to make a statement about war. And it's not, in fact, one of the first things I said to them was, I do not want to glorify war. I want to show the human face of it. And in the course of working with them, learning, if you hang around veterans a bit, like you slowly learn these stories. It comes out slowly. And a lot of these guys are not very good storytellers, but that's something that I feel like I can help draw attention to what they do. Because even though I have been historically a liberal, I am not for war. And especially now with what's going on, this is my only answer. We've got to stop doing this to each other. And so I'm doing all these cutouts in the studio, 4x8 sheets of alu panel, which is like a sign material, of anything from showing a soldier with PTSD who's sort of half in combat, half in civilian clothes, a female soldier. I got to know a woman who had worked for the CIA and had some very terrible injuries as a result of that, as well as showing our own family, Grandpa Lewis and Mom and Aunt Ruthie. Aunt Annie's not in it because she wasn't born yet, in World War II. And when he served in Fort Lewis, Fort Lewis, Washington was where that photograph was taken. And, you know, really showing the human face of it. And the fact that, like, there's kind of this hole in our family, I think, because Grandpa died before we can meet him. And I also wanted to show people who I knew and who were not perfect people. We want our heroes to be straight up good and our villains to be pure evil. And the reality is we all are on this continuum going back and forth. And most of us are somewhere in the middle, actually. Ordinary people can do heroic things. Ordinary people can do horrible things. And we can really choose. And then the other thing that I'm doing a lot of is, because when I initially did the mural design, I had a beautiful view of the Olympic Mountains. And they were all like, well, that's nice, but we could see that anywhere. We want a Sherman tank. We want a Jeep. We want an F-18. And they kept adding all these, like, war machines onto it. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Because you cannot tell the history of war without talking about these various machines innovations. It's a marvel to actually be painting these things, really looking at a Sherman tank. Oh my God. Challenging me on every level as an artist. So, and there's a couple of other projects too that I've been working on. Ian's Ride, which is a fundraiser for a quadriplegic who has a message about getting out in nature and how that can help people with disabilities, but just people in general. And he's been amazing to work. But of course, I feel like so happy to be seeing you guys because this is the highlight.
I love this so much, Les. I love these projects are just wonderful. If you can follow Melissa on Facebook or Instagram, you'll see she posts a lot of her process. And so it's just wonderful to see how things are coming together. And you feel like I live a couple hours away. And so it's like I'm there getting to see this coming together. And it's just amazing. And what a tribute to our family and to everybody who has served.
I agree with what you said about it. It's part of the problem of memorials is that they can sometimes glorify or celebrate something that we definitely want to honor people's sacrifices. I think trying to give a sort of realistic picture is that you kind of represent all sides is so important. Can you tell again what, so if people want to follow you on Instagram or your website?
Yeah. So my website is melissakline.com and that has all of the links for the Facebook and Instagram. Instagram is Melissa Klein Art as well. And I think Facebook kind of uses Melissa Klein Art too. I kind of have them all linked up.
And if you go to our website, we'll have links to.
It would be great if we could put some pictures of the cutouts. I think are just awesome. I've been enjoying looking at those because, well, for one thing, the scale of them, I imagine artistically, is really a challenge. Getting balance of the detail with the scale.
Yeah, I mean, some of the cutouts, like the F-18 is about 4 feet by 8 feet. I mean, I try to get it to fit on that's the size of the IU panel. And kind of the different techniques, like the Sherman tank, I wanted to show how gritty and dirty war is, that this thing was like slogging through mud. And then the F-18, which is this beautiful predator bird airplane, how clean and... Also, as I was painting, I was like, oh my God, this thing is loaded down with bombs, but the bombs look like boobs. And I'm like, whoa.
Oh my God.
I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. This is, you know, this is kind of a thing.
Well, Liz, thank you so much for coming on and for filling us in on all your great projects. We're definitely going to look forward to seeing some of the fruition. And happy birthday, because April is your birthday month. So we thought that the best gift would be to have you on and make you work. That's what's
because I'm not sleep deprived.
Yeah. Right when Liz is in the middle of these projects, let's tell her that she needs to come on and share her tomato, not stewed.
Yeah. Well, and damn it, I will do it because you guys are my sisters and I love you. And also, you guys have been hugely supportive. One of the reasons why I'm able to do what I'm doing is because of your support, and you guys are making the dream come true. So damn it, I better show up with the pointer recipe.
Thanks, Liz.
Thanks for having me on here. I love you.
Love you, Liz.
Love you.
Bye now.
So, Booty, what are you knitting?
Well, I'm making pretty good progress on the knit-along poncho. Again, it's Glimmer with Treasure Goddess Yarn Silk Yak DK in Treasure of the Emerald Isle. There's a lot of treasure in there.
A lot of treasure, yeah.
And I'm really enjoying it. It's a great one for knitting in front of the TV, kind of once you get just the little panels of lace down, and they're not that hard. It's one of those where you can really look and see, is this, did something go wrong? And sometimes with lace, you want to have a lifeline. And I put in a tutorial for our last episode on how to do that. This one, I'm not doing a lifeline, and I'm finding if I make a mistake, I can rip back pretty easily.
Yeah. I think because it's not that big of a panel either, too. And it, I really like the pattern because you can see easily sort of where you are in it. So you don't, I find when I make mistakes, it's because I thought I was at a different place in the pattern than I was. That said, I've done absolutely nothing on our knit along. You are knitting along and I'm knitting not. Although I have been working on, well, I knit two hats for my ungrateful son because he's been wearing this hat that he really likes, the big ones that kind of fit over. And he's been wearing this old Annabella hat that either you or I knit him many years ago, and it's super big. And he looks like Dumb Donald on Remember Fat Albert, that kid who wore the big knitted hat with the eyes out, the big pink hat, who's not to be confused with Mushmouth, who was the one who said, hibba, 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 hibba. Yeah, so he looks like Dumb Donald, the kid who has sort of a giant pink mushroom with eye holes over his head. But the first one that I knit, he was here and he tried it and he was like, well, this is a very nice hat, Mom, but it's way too small. It will not create the Dumb Donald look that I'm, the grunge Dumb Donald look that I'm going for, because of course it's not pink, it's black. So now I'm working on another one that seems huge, and I have a feeling it's going to be too small too. But in the meantime, I have been invited to a baby shower. So I need to start on a baby blanket. So many projects, so little time. But I do think that all of the brown and dark green yarn that I have in my stash is probably not the best choice for a baby blanket. So we will be going to Webb's, America's Yarn Store, to find some good yarn for that. But the other thing I've been doing is trying to spring clean and organize.
Yes, it's definitely. Well, we are embarking on a big remodel of our condo, our not Marie Kondo condo. So we're starting with a relatively small project, which is the bathroom. And so just going through all of the cabinets and getting rid of stuff. Why do I have so much stuff?
Well, that's my question for you. Do you have a particular method for your, I mean, I know you're going on that project, but even that though, for your spring cleaning and organizing, do you have a method?
Well, yeah, I think that in order to go forward, you have to kind of go backward. So, I mean, the main thing is you get stuff out, and that makes it look much worse. And I think this is true of your stash. And Marie Green has talked a lot about this in her book, The Joy of Yarn. She also has some classes. She has a stash busting workshop. That's really great. And I know you feel like, oh my God, I'm paying somebody to help me get a hold of my stash. But it is really helpful. And one of the things she says is get everything out so you can see it. And I think that is so true. I mean, especially with the yarn, right? We hide it. It's so easy to put yarn in a box and put it away and forget about it and not really remember what you have. Nobody, when they start out with their stash, they don't start out with, I'm going to get this big, huge bookcase and fill it with yarn. They start with a few skeins and then it's a few more, and then they realize it needs to expand, but maybe they don't have any more room on that shelf. So they put in a closet and then another. You want to be able to access it. You want to see what you have easily. And that's one of the things she talks about.
Yeah, I really like That I really like that needle holder that she had in her book, and I made my own needle holder because I felt like every time I had a new project, I could never find the needle that the project required. I was pretty certain that I probably had it, but where it was a mystery. So I made this hanging thing just out of canvas fabric that I had in my fabric stash.
Your fabric larder.
I was really proud of it. And then my son came home and he said, "What is that thing, Mom?" Because I had it hanging upstairs. And I said, "Well, that's my needle holder." And he said, "Oh, really? It looks like some weird thing that came out of that creepy anthropology movie Midsummer." It's called pointed thing sticking out. Torture device.
Torture device. Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah. I have one that I got on Amazon, but then for my birthday, Bossy and Mom gave me this beautiful needle case from Hohe Locatelli, and I love it. And it's great. And that one is great for if you're traveling and you're not sure which projects you're going to want to work on, you can easily pack 10 different needle sizes in there.
Well, and we should give a shout out because we both love Hohe. You had introduced me to that. They make beautiful project bags. And then I know you had some other needle holders that you had talked about too.
So if you really want to do it yourself, you can make your own needle holder. And this is a brilliant idea from Becky Clowers. And it's the Memories of Aloha pattern. It's so pretty. So you can make a really fancy needle holder.
You can knit knitting needle holder.
Knitting. And I love that she uses one of the old straight needles, one of the big old straight needles as a hanger. Of course, you could just use a stick or whatever, but it's really pretty. And Becky also has project bags on her Etsy shop, Bella Rica. We'll put in links for that. And as well, the other one I really love is my friend Lucy, who has an Etsy shop called Knitting Sleuth. And she has really adorable bags too, yes, and stitch markers.
Here's my conundrum. I mean, whenever I embark on, spring cleaning, I always feel like first, I have to binge watch a bunch of Netflix shows on cleaning. I watch Marie Kondo, you mentioned her, and I have to sort of get this theory of spring cleaning. So then I have to think about bigger life issues, like what brings me joy? And I do love Marie Kondo, and I love how she's got this idea of karashi, or she says, quote, "The true purpose of tidying is not to cut down on your possessions or declutter your space." That was news to me. But rather, the ultimate goal is to spark joy every day and lead a joyful life. And that goal, the inner why, should help guide everything we do and expands well beyond the home. That's from her website, but she says similar things in her show. But I do think one of the reasons I like watching these shows, in addition to basic procrastinating, is when I see other people's mess, I think, well, at least I'm not as bad as that couple that has saved every Halloween costume for the past 50 years or something. But then I think, well, could I make it on one of those shows? Like, what would be the thing? Am I bad enough to be a subject of one of those shows? And so that's the first sort of thing. And then I convince myself that I don't have enough storage containers. Yeah. And then I have to have a little debate about, well, am I going to be satisfied with the selection of storage containers in ye olde Sturbridge Walmart? Or do I need to drive 40 miles to the container store? So I feel like there's a whole bunch of steps before I even get to it. There's the binge watching, the self-congratulating that I'm not as bad as those people, followed by the serious self-examination. Am I as bad? What would that show be like? And then the purchasing. So it takes me so long just to get to that moment of dealing with my quasi.
Well, in a way, the Shakers really were smart because they had very few possessions. They didn't have a lot of clothes. And so they didn't have closets. They just had some pegs on the wall and that was it. They didn't have boxes of shampoo. And I found going through the bathroom, 3 Costco packs of soap. And also I went through our storage closet. I think I found at least 5 big packs of toilet paper. And it was because, and this is the thing about not knowing what you have, I didn't have it all in one spot. It was stacked in all different areas in there. You reach right. for the one that, that one's almost empty, time to get another one. I think the pulling out and seeing what you actually have. And then once you put it in one spot, I'm not
right.
getting rid of the toilet paper, but I don't need to keep that many on hand. So that space gets bigger.
Yeah. Eventually. Although I will say, I remember when we were cleaning out our basement, like at least you found valuable things that don't go bad. Soap and toilet paper. We have a house that was built in 1759. So it has a dirt floor basement. And at various points, I've gone down to clean because we do keep some things down there. Well, actually, our laundry is down there. We had this whole debate about whether we were going to pour concrete in, and we decided that no, there's this ecosystem down there that's lived happily for 250 years, which is leave it. When water gets down there, you don't need a pump or anything. But so periodically, I'll go down. I was trying to make the dirt more even. So I was
leveling out the dirt.
It's not like there's good dirt and bad dirt, but somehow I had this idea that if it was smooth dirt, that would look better. I was sweeping it up, evening it out, and putting it in this box. And I was going to take the dirt from the basement out and add it to dirt outside. But then the box got really heavy. So I just left it in a corner because I thought that the big, strong husband man was going to pick it up. And so fast forward 10 years later, a box of dirt, not toilet paper that you can use, but a box of dirt is in our basement. And we're cleaning out our basement again because we're replacing the oil tanks or something. The big, strong husband goes over and he tries to pick up the box, but since it's been 10 years, the bottom has rotted. So when he picks it up, he just gets these 2 sides of the box just come up like 2 wings of a cardboard angel box.
Was it like a solid cube or did it just?
Yeah, it was like a solid cube because it was still moist. And so he goes, "What is this?" And I say, "It's a box of dirt." He goes, "Why are we keeping a box of dirt?" And I say, and these are the ridiculous situations you get yourself into. And I said, "Oh, we aren't keeping it. We're waiting to throw it away."
Yeah, the way stations of the cross. That you're putting this one goes to Goodwill. This one goes to recycling. This one goes to the trash. Of course, I'm going to try to give something to somebody who can actually use it. I did find out a good tip here. Habitat for Humanity. They'll pick up something if you put it out for them. They'll pick it up for free. And in our case, because we live in a condo and I have some furniture that's a little fragile, they'll come in and disassemble and pack it up for $100. You pay more than that to rent a truck and take something to the dump.
Yeah.
And at the idea that somebody could actually
Yeah, I know.
Use
I do feel like I hate to sort of, I mean, we do have a section of take it or leave it at the dump where you can leave some stuff. And but I like the idea of somebody being able to use it, but nobody is going to be able to use a box of dirt. And when he said, well, what's the difference between keeping it and waiting to throw it out? And I said, oh, there is no difference, except that you're going to be the one now to throw it out, because 10 years ago, I was going to be the one to throw it out, but it was too heavy.
Right. And there's a way that that happens as well, as, you know, well, I need to wait for somebody to come home, or, well, and when I'm sorting through things that aren't mine, the kids' stuff and my husband's stuff. Yes. The other recommendation I have about the Marie Kondo is great. Those are great shows. My friend told me about this show, the Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning. And this is...
Did you say gentle death cleaning?
I love this idea. And this is kind of, this goes back to the philosophy. Here's your motivation, is not having your children or loved ones be burdened with your stuff when you're no longer with us. I mean, it's a huge gift to go through your things yourself and decide what you like and what you don't need to hold on to. And so for me, in going through my things, it's kind of a way to say, is this something that I want my kids to have to deal with? Like piles of paper. I feel like the yarn I can hold on to because it's valuable.
And it brings you joy. See, I think that's the two things. It's like, it's that moment of the present of, does it bring you joy? And I do think there are moments where it's sort of like, I don't know, how can it bring me joy if I don't even remember that I have it, because it's in the attic. And but then you pull it out and you're like, oh, right. This, oh, my formal china. I like that in 1988.
Right. And that is a tough one, because is my child really going to want this? What are they going to be? And I don't want it. So it probably needs to go. And for me, that was very motivating to say, like, okay.
Well, yeah, because it's kind of, I think Marie Kondo's more about the present. But I do think there is a way that you do need to think about who's going to have to deal with this.
And I love this one woman in the show. She's with this. So there are three Swedish people. One is a psychologist, one is a designer, and the other one is kind of the organizing woman. And this guy comes out, he has this sculpture. He says, well, my son made it. And she said, yeah, kids make crappy stuff. I had these clay sculptures that if you tried to pick it up, you would get cut, because they had all these jagged edges and they were just slap it together. And so very much the kids really enjoyed this experience. It was a wonderful camp, and they came home with these creations that, of course, you know, the person who had the camp was, here you go. But it was about the process. It wasn't about product in that case. Mm-hmm. And I think that that they were both fine with me letting those things go.
And I do think that's a whole other area of somebody else's stuff too. I do think often that we're more sentimental about these things as parents than the kids are. They're often like, oh yeah, you know, they made me make that at camp, but you seem to like it.
I remember the potter saying, the great thing about pottery is it comes from the earth and it goes back to the earth. And I love that. Mm. Like, this is just part of the cycle. So much like the dirt.
That gets, well, in our case, it just gets moved. It goes from being inside dirt to being outside dirt. And you just need somebody to help with that transition. But no, it is such fraught. Well, I'm hoping that we're beyond the snowstorms that we were having last time. And now we're just into the tick and poison ivy and spring cleaning season in earnest now. But no, I do think it is such an interesting thing. And I think I really like embracing the procrastination strategies of watching shows, because I always have this idea, well, I can't really do that. Can't be organizing and cleaning stuff after 8 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like,
oh,
that's too late.
Yeah, I've heard all kinds of advice, you know, set a timer, you could keep going, and you probably will keep going. But just, you know, the what was our quote for the first episode? The beginning is more than half of the whole.
Oh, yeah. And shines a light through all that follows. Yeah.
Just getting started. I've heard start with your underwear drawer. It's an interesting one.
Mm.
I would say
ostensibly the smallest drawer.
Right, exactly. Like some, and then, you know, you move down.
Yeah.
But I would say maybe the refrigerator would be a good.
Yeah, that's a good spot. Or the larder. We spent a lot of time talking about the larder, but there are things.
If you would like, I can post that video that I took of your larder.
Well, in the vein of making other people feel good about themselves. I think that's why I told the story of the basement dirt, because I hope all of our listeners are thinking, well, at least I don't have a box of dirt in my basement that stayed down there for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't have a basement. So that's why I don't have a box of dirt in my basement.
Well, Booty, I think we've covered a lot of ground here between Melissa Hiles' excellent recipe, which I thoroughly enjoyed and had many happy memories of her making that for me. And I don't know, food is so much better when other people make it. We could talk about that some other time. And then our knit along, which you're making great progress and I'm not. And then our tales of spring cleaning triumphs. Well, I don't know if there were any triumphs.
Not yet.
Tribulations. But we're working. We're slouching towards triumph, I guess.
Crawling through the dirt in the basement.
Working our way up to the larder in the attic. But I think it's time to say, whatever you do,
don't knit. Sister.
Like my sister. But do check out our website, bootyandbossy.com, where we will put some pictures that will make you feel better about your larder and your basement.
And you can find more details about the recipe and all the things we talked about.
Thank you. And hope you'll join us for the next episode.
I thought you were going to say hubba, hubba, hubba.
And hubba, hubba, hubba.